Here's Andy Udman.
For people that aren't familiar with fentanyl, just how powerful is it? And I guess how would it compare to, say, OxyContin?
Fentanyl is extremely powerful. It's per milligram strength or per microgram strength, it's significantly more powerful than oxycodone, the chemical found in OxyContin or the new OxyNeo. It's extremely powerful.
So tell me how it is that that it's being abused in terms of used patches, because on the surface you would think if the patch has been used that it's done, spent, that there wouldn't be anything left, but there is.
Yeah, there is. Fentanyl, first of all, I mean, let's not make the distinction. It's a fantastic medication, and when used appropriately, it does a fantastic job on pain. However, in its misuse, it's extremely deadly because the patch, after use, there's still a significant amount of medication left in that patch.
9 minutes now after 10 o'clock on this Tuesday morning. I want to talk about the state of mind of the person in the car next to you this morning. I think that's the way that it really drives home this story to me. The state of mind and body of the person in the car next to you out driving there this morning, especially when we have wintry conditions like we have, especially to the north of London. We've also had several crashes in the city of London, conditions under which we all need to be really, really paying attention. It is shocking to me, and I get a reminder about this all the time from Pam Colleen about drugs and the effects of drugs. I mean, my go-to story on this is watching ABC News every night, and it's sponsored primarily by drug companies. And in the first 30 seconds of the commercial, they always highlight the beneficial effects of the drug. In the last 5 minutes, it seems, they go through all the serious side effects of drugs. And one of them is, you're thinking, you shouldn't be driving a car while you're on these drugs. Now an Ottawa pharmacist is trying to bring in tighter regulations with respect to this other painkiller called fentanyl. But I want to start our discussion this morning with Pam Colleen with a reminder about some of these drugs and their impact. Good morning, Pam.
Hi, Andy. How are you today?
I'm good. You're always the one who says, there's a line in some of the commercials, you should not operate heavy machinery if you're on this drug. How about a car on the 401?
That's right. If you're using these drugs, there's a very high risk that you're impaired, just like a drunk driver would be impaired. And now in England, for example, ministers there are saying that they're going to try and do something about this drug driving epidemic. And they're saying that this drug driving phenomenon could be playing a part in about half of all road deaths, Andy. Half.
That is absolutely shocking. There was a piece, remind us, Pam, of the piece that I saw on ABC a couple of weeks ago about just the sleeping drug, Ambien.
That's right. People are still under the effects of some of these sleeping pills, even when they get in the car and go to work the next day. So this report that showed on ABC News showed a reporter who took the drug and then proceeded several hours later to get in a car and drive, and she indeed was impaired. You know, we have a polypharmacy out there today. We don't know how many people are under the influence at any given point in time during the day. There are potentially thousands of drugs in people's systems while they're out there driving their car. And I'm not saying people don't need relief, Andy. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that we're crossing the line in the sand in terms of the number of drugs available to us, in terms of our dependence on these drugs. But also what I'm saying is that we should be feeling energized, focused, motivated naturally without the need for drugs. And that's what the doctors aren't keeping an eye on. That's what the medical schools aren't keeping an eye on, that our natural blueprint is to be happy, healthy, and energized without the dependence for a drug.
Okay, I want to go live to London City Police because it got me really curious thinking about this and just a series of reports about the influence of drugs, prescription drugs, on people while they're driving. Joining us this morning, Constable Reed Holland from London City Police. Good morning, Constable.
Good morning, Andy.
You and I just chatted about what your title is. Give me that title, if you would. You are, you used to call it an expert in this area. What is the title you're using?
Currently I'm referred to as a drug recognition evaluator. I'm an evaluating officer as per the criminal code when it comes to drug-impaired driving.
So what happens here? A constable, an officer notices erratic driving. They notice after they stop the car that the driver seems woozy or out of it. What do they do in such a case?
If there's grounds to believe that the person has committed the offense of impaired driving and that there are indicia of impairment, the driver could be placed under arrest and brought to the police station. If there's an odor of an alcoholic beverage, we would start with a breath test. However, if the breath results aren't indicative or aren't reflective of the level of impairment, meaning a low blood alcohol concentration but still a high level of impairment, then one of us would be called in to perform a drug influence evaluation on this person to determine if their ability to operate a motor vehicle is impaired by a drug, and if so, by what category or categories of drugs. If that's the case, then we take a biological sample. In our case, we obtain a urine sample, and it's sent off to the Center of Forensic Sciences for a toxicological analysis to support our findings in our evaluation, and then the charge is sent through the court.
Alcohol is such an easy one compared to drugs. Alcohol, you've got the smell, and then you've got the test, and you can easily tell in mere seconds whether the person is impaired or not. Reed, is this a serious issue yet in London, Ontario? Pam has pointed to other jurisdictions where we're starting to see sort of an explosion of this problem. Any sign of it yet in London?
I think it's a serious issue anytime anyone gets behind the wheel when their ability to operate is impaired by alcohol or drugs. Typically, specifically for drug-impaired driving, the last 3 years, we've averaged about 14 incidents or 14 occurrences where a driver has been arrested and charged for impaired operation of a motor vehicle by drug. Anytime someone gets behind the wheel and they're not 100% focused and prepared to perform that complex and divided attention task, then that's an issue and potentially puts other road users at risk.
Well, it's a very personal issue for me because I had the wife of a friend who was struck down just west of London in the Elsa Craig area just a few years ago, and this young man had been smoking some kind of drug, including marijuana. So the impact is the charge. What is the charge, Reed? Is it impaired driving, just like alcohol?
That's correct. It's still impaired operation of a motor vehicle, yes.
Wow.
Andy, there's a University of Western Ontario law professor. Her name is Erica Chamberlain, and she's been hired by MAD to study this issue. And she says that of the fatally injured drivers tested for drugs, one-third tested positive for drugs.
Wow.
It's a pervasive problem. There's no question about it.
Wow. Well, Constable, thank you for the education. I hadn't heard that term before. Drug Recognition Evaluator is the title now. Constable, I appreciate you filling us in this morning.
My pleasure. Take care.
Thank you so much. I want to just expand our discussion a little this morning. There is a pharmacist, a pharmacy owner near Ottawa, who is very concerned about the effects of drugs on people generally. They can, in fact, be fatal. And he's not talking specifically about OxyContin. I want to bring into the conversation this morning Mark Barnes, who owns and manages the Westboro PharmaSave. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
We've just been focusing, Mark, on the effect of some of these drugs on people while they're driving. Is that part of the concern you have, or is this just about their state of health generally?
State of health generally. We have a bit of a specific issue in Ottawa area with some significant, some deaths among young people, teenagers and young adults using fentanyl.
Okay, I want to get to that in just a moment. Let me just ask you to segue from the discussion we've been having about the impact of this drug on people. Are they driving while they're on this drug?
No, it's completely overdose. So there's no driving. I would hope that on any narcotic, especially someone who's newly taking narcotics who has zero resistance to it or zero tolerance built up, that they would not get behind any motor vehicle. Certainly that goes with a lot of medications, not just narcotics, but certainly any medications that can cause drowsiness or dizziness, that they would actually let the medication build up tolerance in their body so they're not impaired before even thinking about operating a vehicle. And that's part of what pharmacists do in their counseling with patients on drug use.
I want to bring Pam Killeen back into the conversation. Pam Killeen is a nutrition and wellness coach who's on with us regularly on my program, London Today. And she's always bringing up this concern of the side effects of some drugs. And this morning we're looking specifically at the impact on their driving. Pam, I wonder if you could just summarize what we chatted about off the air about a couple of examples of some of the drugs that people are on and what impact we are now starting to see on their driving. Then I want to ask Mark to comment.
Oh, there's multitudes of drugs that are potentially going to impair somebody, anything from cannabis to the opiates, cocaine, amphetamines. There's just a gamut of different drugs out there that could be part of this problem. The trick is, you know, do we hire this company that did the urine testing for the Olympics? They have some of the state-of-the-art urine testing equipment available in the world to detect even minute amounts of drugs in the system. So, I mean, the technology is there. It's just a matter of, and there's thousands of drugs that could be implicated. It's just a matter of saying, we need to start this discussion. I don't hear this being talked about. It's almost as if it's sort of normalized in society to take these mood-altering drugs that potentially could impair one's driving ability and then take it to the next level and say, are they committing a crime by doing this?
Give us the example of the drug you were talking about with me off the air a little earlier this morning.
You know, even things like benzodiazepines, they're anxiolytics, and they should only be prescribed for relatively short periods of time. And I talk to people on a regular basis who are taking these drugs, and I'm telling you, they're very, very unstable. I would be very concerned about these people getting behind the wheel of a car.
Mark, your comment.
Certainly, to a large amount, what she's saying is actually true. A lot of these drugs, they're the most obvious ones. However, you have to realize that as a patient builds up tolerance to medication, a lot of these effects that will actually impair driving are tolerable. They wear off. So if on day one I take a benzodiazepine, as she alluded to, Ativan as a famous one, or even take morphine, on day one, yes, I could not drive. On day 10, taking the same dose as prescribed by a physician, I would absolutely have no impairment of driving.
Pam?
Well, everybody's going to have a different tolerance, though. So on an individual
basis, how can you put drug testing in anyway? Because if someone's going to have tolerance built up, then you're telling a patient who's now going to be treated for the rest of their life on medication due to whatever disorder. And I'm not talking about the obvious ones, such as morphine and benzodiazepines, but even some antidepressants, some old-fashioned tricyclic antidepressants that can lead to dizziness and drowsiness. Mm-hmm. You cannot tell a patient they cannot drive once they've been on that medication and stabilized after 3 months. Because those side effects no longer happen.
Do you tell
maybe
them not?
Maybe on paired increased dosing, maybe on changes in dosings, we have to be concerned again. But you cannot, you know, put a blanket out there saying that you cannot drive or have to have drug testing because the level of drug in my body that causes drowsiness may not be the same level in your body that causes drowsiness. So it's a very, very fine line.
Do you tell them that in the initial stages they may want to avoid driving?
That's exactly what we say.
And what
is there any way to monitor that? That's the question here.
Well, you would hope that they know through proper education by both physician and pharmacist and regular follow-up through the Ontario MedCheck program that this doesn't happen. There is ways we can do that. The support of family members as well. However, this is not the ideal situation for everybody. But if we get it out there and maybe, you know, make people aware, then hopefully it'll cut down on the problem. But unfortunately, you're taking away people's right to drive on a medication once they're stabilized would be probably unethical.
Well, Mark, let me ask you one more question before you go. I saw your interview on CTV's Canada AM this morning, and I certainly applaud what you're doing. You're very concerned about this one particular drug. Tell us about the drug and what it is that you think we need to do to protect people from this drug.
Well, I've started a bit of a storm across the country. I've started asking patients in my practice to return used fentanyl patches to the pharmacy before they're allowed to have the next prescription. So whether it be a new narcotic prescription written by a physician or whether it be a part fill, certainly if a physician writes, I want you to have, you know, give 30 patches, dispense 5 every, you know, 15 days or whatever it would be, then before they receive the second part of 5, they would return the previous prescription of the used patches back to the pharmacy, and I would destroy them right away.
What got you so concerned that you were prompted to start this crusade?
There's been a couple deaths. I actually have a humongous addiction treatment program in my current pharmacy location, and we are opening a newer 6,000 square foot addiction treatment and research center in the east end of Ottawa in April. So I'm seeing the addicted side of people. I'm already seeing the effects of people misusing narcotics. So I'm like, if I'm going to act and be an advocate for that side of the practice, I need to prevent it. So how can I prevent this? After talking to my methadone patients, they're telling me that ultimately people who have prescriptions are now our dealers. It's not the typical dealer on the corner of the street of a person who accesses a bunch of drugs who wants to sell it. These are people who have a prescription who are diverting half of them, using half of them for extra cash. So then I said, well, an easy way to stop this would be to have them return the patches to us, because then they can't, you know, if it's been diverted or changed in any way, they don't receive the second part of the prescription, the problem has stopped. After speaking to most of my clientele about this, they said that this program will absolutely eliminate the supply on the street.
Let me just ask you, because we're running short of time before we let you go. We're having quite a debate in this city right now about meth clinics. What are your thoughts on meth clinics? Number one?
Unfortunately, methadone clinics have extremely bad name. It is by far the most rewarding part of my pharmacy practice. I have a humongous community practice in Ottawa. This is only one small part of my practice, and by far is the most rewarding. If you give someone a chance and treat them with respect, you'll have no problems. These are not patients who are using drugs. These are patients who are trying to make a difference in their life, and there's so much negative stigma towards methadone clinics, and basically it's misinformed professionals who've made judgments about the type of people. It's a fantastic program. It works. I've seen people get their lives back, kids back. It's fantastic. I cannot support it enough. And I am in an area in Western Ottawa where the average price of housing is $600,000. It's not a scummy area, you know, as the, you know, the stereotypical thought of it. It's an extremely, very, very uppity type area. Lots of nice restaurants and shops and schools and churches. And I have absolutely no crime problems in my area because I treat people with respect and I get it back.
Mark, it's been very interesting having you on these various subjects. Mark Barnes, the owner of a pharmacy, the Westboro PharmaSave in the Ottawa area. Really appreciate you coming on with us this morning, and especially with your thoughts on meth clinic. We may just get back to you and have a further chat on that issue at another date. Thank you for now, and we appreciate you joining us.
No problem.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Okay, Pam, we're almost out of time. Just your thoughts on the meth clinic issue, since that is such a hot topic in London right now. Do you agree with his comments?
Well, gravitating to drugs is a natural thing today. People really, you know, we're kind of brainwashed to think that drugs are going to be the answer to our health problems, mental health, physical health problems, whatever. I dig really deep into the biochemistry to see what's really wrong in the first place. Why are people having cravings in the first place? And what I'm doing is so incredibly new that people who are of the belief that drugs are the answer really have a tough time embracing it. My clients don't, because my clients get better. They can come off drugs. They get to feel happy, healthy, energized naturally just because they're eating the right foods and their biochemistry is in balance. But again, I'm a lone voice in Canada doing this work. Very few people know about biochemistry and how it applies with regards to one's mood. So it's going to take a long battle to basically change people's belief systems around addiction. Addiction is not a personality flaw. It's not a moral defect. It is a biochemical problem. And so, you know, we have to help these people get back to functioning naturally. We shouldn't be turning to drugs as the answer. They're a good stopgap measure, no question about it. But we've got to get them back running whole in society so that they can, you know, what I always like to say is run on all eight cylinders without having the dependency on a drug in the first place.
Terrific. Pam, Colleen, we thank you for your perspective on
and
this.
And I'm teaching tomorrow night at the Central Library as well, so I'll be talking a lot about this tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Central Library.
Central Library, 6:30. Be there. Thanks, Pam.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay, terrific. A 10:30 news update. On the other side of the news, we want to talk about golf. Why the city is leasing more golf carts, because more people want to ride in the carts. I thought it was all about walking and staying healthy. Why is that? And thanks to Trojan Technology, in part, London is shooting to become a world leader in how we treat sewage water, to the point where you can drink it. Lovely thought, isn't it? It is a lovely thought, and we'll talk about it coming up next in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.